was Duke Kahanamoku, more than anyone else, who put Waikiki and the legendary Beach Boys on the map as Hawaii and Waikiki's ambassador to the world. It all started with Duke's stellar performance at the 1912 Summer Olympics in Stockholm, where he swam away with a gold and silver medal in the 100-meter freestyle and freestyle relay. Racking up more Olympic medals over the years, he simultaneously introduced Hawaiian-style surfing to Southern California, Australia, and New Zealand. Back home on the beach at Waikiki, it was Duke and his brother who propelled the legend of the Waikiki Beach Boys onto the world stage. They taught vacationers to surf and took them out for outrigger canoe rides through the surf. The Waikiki Beach Boy experience was birthed in conjunction with the newly opened Moana Hotel back in 1901. By the 1920s, the Waikiki Beach Boys had become legendary as gregarious hosts and entertainers embodying the hypnotic charm of the Aloha spirit. Hollywood stars such as Bing Crosby, Carol Lombard, John Wayne, and Judy Garland fell under their spell. But probably the most legendary character was tobacco heiress Doris Duke, regarded as the world's richest woman at the time. She became an avid surfer because of her enchantment with the Beach Boys and eventually purchased a home for Duke Kahanamoku's brother near her Diamond Head estate. The wild and crazy days of the Waikiki Beach Boys settled down over the years, but they remain as a vital part of the magic allure for tourists from around the world who want to learn to surf or take a spin aboard an outrigger canoe. Ted Bush, whose family lineage dates to prehistoric times in the Hawaiian Islands, grew up on the beach at Waikiki in the 1950s and well remembers the legendary Beach Boys. Today, Ted Bush and his daughter Tracy continue the Waikiki Beach Boy tradition with their Waikiki Beach Services business on the seashore in front of the Royal Hawaiian and Moana Surfrider Hotels. In addition to surfing lessons, they offer stand-up paddling lessons, catamaran charter sails, and traditional outrigger canoe adventures and surfboard rentals. Come along and join Ted Bush as he talks about the Waikiki Beach Boy experience, past and present. We're here with Ted Bush on the beach at Waikiki. And Ted has been an intimate part of the beach scene at Waikiki since the 50s, right? You grew up here.
I grew up in the 50s on Waikiki Beach, yep. Many years ago and many hotels ago.
Tell us about when you started your business and why and what it does.
I officially started the business in 1977. The company already existed, Waikiki Beach Services, since 1955. And the proprietor, this woman, I worked for her. And I learned my trade through all her employees and captains and beach boys. And then when I finally became, significant in Waikiki, the owners knew me, the hotel owners, the landowners. I took a stab of trying to get ownership of beach services, and it worked out.
So even predating your incarnation, the Beach Boys had a legendary ring with Hawaii and a connection with Hollywood, with Doris Duke, all kinds of people around the world.
You know, I think we were reluctant ambassadors. We didn't know that we were creating this subculture. We were just having fun. We were out here. Everybody enjoyed the beach who worked here because you couldn't make a living. There was no way to make a living. But we just kept coming down to the beach, loving it. And then visitors, primarily celebrities in the early 50s, 40s, they got engaged with us because, you know, we're good around the water. And so they trusted their family with us. And I guess we like to party, as they say. There's a lot of singing or melee involved. And even if we weren't joined by the guests could hear from the hotel rooms that we're down the beach celebrating, singing, cooking out on the beach. So I guess the story went back to the destinations they're from and talking about us. And lo and behold, you know, people came asking to see the Beach Boys, and we couldn't understand why they wanted to see us. They thought, yeah, are we in trouble? But yeah.
So you guys would take out guests on the outrigger canoes. Mm-hmm. You teach them surfing, take them out surfing. What are some of the other things, primary things that you guys were expertise?
Well, since that era I talked to you about, more and more people came, and then the state recognized there was a major liability. You know, we're taking people out, and then with more and more people, there are charges, there are revenue, income sources, and all that. So they had to regulate it, and so they started these associations within the state that required us to have life-saving certifications, CPR certifications, all that stuff. And then as well, we had to take a test to show our skills in the water. This was before the lifeguards became prominent. And so at that point, the Beach Boys kind of evolved into actual state-certified personnel. If you wanted to practice and go out there, take people out, whether it was in on a surfboard, or in the canoes, or on the catamaran sail, you had to be certified. That's where we are today.
It's not just a simple matter of coming out and hanging out at the beach anymore.
No, it's not. It's a matter of dedication. I think the main thing that happens is that more people have come, and now that it's become such a big attraction, there's more revenue. You know, a lot of people want to do it now, thinking that, you know, quote-unquote, easy money. Yeah. But if they went out there and they were unregulated and something happened, that would destroy this thing that we took us 100 years to build, over 100 years to build.
Let's dovetail back to the myth, legend, and lore and the romance of the Beach Boys. And you, personally, you were friends with John Ford, the producer, with all kinds of incredible Hollywood people. Tell us about some of your most memorable interactions.
Well, Uncle John is what we called him, but Actually, I was introduced to Uncle John or John Ford. My grandfather worked all day in a bank, and then at the end of the day, he was a former beach boy, and he would relax over at the Moana Hotel. And then one day when he was relaxing, John Ford was walking the shoreline there, mulling over a picture he was about to do with John Wayne. And then my grandfather just yelled out, he says, "You look like you're lost. You need any help?" So they drummed up a relationship, but at that point, my grandfather told him that I was up and coming, several years later, of course, because he would visit us all the time after that. And then he loved the idea of who Beach Boys were. And then when he found out somebody very close to him, his grandson, was becoming a Beach Boy, he really admired that. And so he sought me out, and we became good friends, even though there were three generations between us.
Yeah. And then because of that, you became friends with John Wayne, for example.
Exactly. When John Ford came to town, they would always have a party over at my grandparents. And John Ford would have in tow all the actors that worked for him. And so we met Lucille Ball.
She was at your house?
Yeah. They would just party and sing. And that's, everything revolved around singing and being happy. That was the whole theme of getting together.
Tell us about some of the other luminaries and starlets and stars that came into your life because of your connection and your dad.
Well, Ward Bond, because he was tied at the hip to John Wayne. And we had heads of state, the king of Saudi Arabia. And we had a lot of other behind-the-scenes people in Hollywood that would come down, directors and stuff like that. And I met Shirley Temple when she was an adult already, because she had married when she was doing her, she came back here in her teens, she met her husband here at a party that we're all, not me, but my family and everybody was attending. So when she came back, those were the names that she associated with, was my grandparents, and she would check them and I'd meet them. Richard Boone became a very close friend of ours. He lived in an area called Black Point. He and his wife Claire, the original people that started Hawaii Five-O, and it's just because, I didn't know what was going on at the time. They were just a bunch of friends that hanging out.
Speaking of back in the day, Jack Lord, Hawaii Five-O, I bet you talked to him a few times.
Well, no, I didn't.
Really, honey.
But we all knew him.
Yeah.
He was very prominent. He was a little bit more aloof. He was a nice guy from what I heard, but a little bit more aloof. Once I was an extra, and that was about the closest I came to him.
Your grandfather.
My great-great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, John L. Bush. And when he came over with a lot of the Christians and everybody from the East Coast.
In the 1830s, 1820s?
I don't know the exact date. I think it was like just at the turn of 1800. And because Kamehameha accepted Christianity, he was wanting to learn more about it as well as English. He had my grandfather sit with him next to him on the throne and gave him a name. He said, "With this name, you have to pass it down to your firstborn and every generation." And the name is Kapuhili Okalani. Literally, it means the sacred barrier of the heaven. Well, loosely translated, heaven means also God. And then the king in those days was, regarded as God. So he was the bearer, the protector of Kamehameha.
Way back.
Yeah. So that was it, and so I have that name now because I was the firstborn in my generation.
So your formal name, total name, because you go by Ted.
Is Theodore Kapuhiliokalani Bush. So that's it.
That's very cool. Did your family stay on the Big Island for a few generations, or what happened?
No. My immediate grandparents, both of them are from Molokai. My grandfather came over here to get a job as a civilian at the Pearl Harbor base, and that's why they moved over here. And my grandmother, Emma Bush, she was into music and dancing. She went to the New York Rose Fair to introduce Hawaii to the world, and she sang a lot and danced. So that was in the south end of Waikiki. The area is called Kapahulu. And then after 5 years of age, we actually moved into Waikiki, and I was raised in Waikiki most of the time. Went to Kamehameha schools, but you have to have some blood quantum, of Hawaiian in you. My grandmother's pure Hawaiian. And Harry is my grandfather, Harry Bush, and he was English, Irish, Scottish. That's why I got the name Bush.
Ted Bush, thank you so much for sharing. What an honor and pleasure to meet you.
So it's time to say aloha oi for just a little while. This is Webley Edwards speaking for all the people of Hawaii who send this program and a wish for good luck and much happiness to you until we meet again when Hawaii calls again. This program came from Hawaii.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,